this is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 67. All dogs go to heaven. You can never come back. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. My name is Chelsea, and I am here with my fantastic co-hosts. We've got Mason and Morgan. Say hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, world.
Hello. We're just a bunch of friends. We like to get together. We talk about animated movies, past and the present. And, you know, sometimes we bring up things in the future. But we are really excited today because we're going back in time to the VHS classic, All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Again, this is another dog movie, which is part of our dog series of a podcast that we've been doing. So the other ones that we've been doing, what were the other movies? We've done Balto.
Mm-hmm. We did Up.
And we did Up, which half dog. And now All Dogs Go to Heaven. So anything new happening in your guys' lives? We haven't really done like an update before we jump into the main event.
I have an update.
Go for it.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that I ended my spring semester in the Viz program at A&M. And it turned out really well. I made all A's except for a B in programming, which everyone saw coming because programming sucks when you're an animator. But yeah, it did good. And then we had our big undergrad show, and my animation and visual arts portfolio was a finalist for best portfolio. This is actually a Mason plug. but yeah, my portfolio did really well, and I had some digital paintings that were featured in the Best of undergraduate show. And then I did this character animation video. It was selected for the undergrad visual work. So it's like the digital work. So they like everybody comes into the auditorium and they watch everybody's animation projects. And mine got selected.
Yay!
For that.
Ooh, fancy. Congratulations.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a good semester. And then I've just been taking a break, hanging out in Houston with Shanna while she's working. And we're just here for the weekend, so I'm enjoying that. Oh, I saw Godzilla last night.
Not animation.
Yes, it is. Godzilla's animated.
How was it?
That's Godzilla language for it was really good. I enjoyed it. They did a really good job, and I don't know, the visual effects were pretty stunning, and I'm a Godzilla fan, so I was pretty excited. Just ask Shanna. I've only been like talking about how excited I've been to see it for like 3 months now. And yeah, I finally got to see it, and I was really pleased. If you like the old Godzilla films, then you'll like it a lot. Don't expect as much action as Pacific Rim. But anyway, I'll let people know on articles and stuff.
Yeah, by the time this episode comes out, Mason's article and YouTube review of it will be out, so I'll include that in the show notes.
Woohoo! But yeah, what about you guys?
Let's hear Morgan. Morgan's got some pretty awesome
Ooh,
stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, man, now you're hyping me up. So yesterday I graduated with my MBA, which is really exciting. Thank you. Thank you. So done with school forever. For real, forever. I'm not going back to get my PhD.
You can never go back.
What other exciting things are happening in my life, Chelsea? You're making it seem like there's...
Oh, that is enough to go
okay,
around.
Okay, okay. I was just worried that I didn't know what else was happening in my life.
No.
So, that was fun. So, it's over and graduation is done. I've actually been done with school for about 2 weeks. I was kind of just waiting for the graduation ceremony. And, yeah, we had a bunch of family there. We went to dinner afterward. And it was great. It was really fun.
What are you going to do now? Go to Disneyland?
I really want to go to Disneyland, but I do not want to go during peak summer hours just because that's horrible and lines.
Not.
So we are planning on hopefully going in September when like 20 out of the 30 days are ranked like on a crowd level of 1 out of 10 on touringplans.com. So I'm like,
oh,
yes,
sweet.
Even on like Fridays and Mondays and stuff, I'm like, perfect.
Hey, it's not like you have school or anything in
exactly.
September.
Exactly.
Well, cool. Yeah. So Anaheim then.
Yes. I would like to go to Walt Disney World, but, you know, we're going on a cruise in December, so.
Yeah. Is the Seven Dwarfs ride going to be in Anaheim and Disney World?
I haven't heard anything yet.
Okay. I went with my family last summer, and we did the exact opposite. We went on the July 4th weekend, which it was Adventure. Magic Kingdom was this, like, miserable sea of tourists. Anyway, we had a lot of fun, but on those hot days, like, we just hung out in the Haunted Mansion.
Nice.
Shannon was getting all creeped out because we were... Well, the Haunted Mansion has air conditioning and stuff. It was a week of intense crowds, intense heat, and intensely expensive food at Magic Kingdom. By gosh, it's the happiest place on earth, but man, that is a $9 cheeseburger right there.
It's all about the corn dogs at Disneyland. Hand-dipped corn dogs.
Oh man, you know what is our favorite? Is to get the Dole Whip over in Adventureland.
Those are good. Yes.
They're always delicious.
Also my favorite thing to do. Oh yeah.
No, I was going to say, anyways, we could talk about this on our new Disneyland podcast.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
I know.
All right, Chelsea, what about you?
There's really not all that much that is going on that's like, woohoo, let's, you know, I didn't finish school and I didn't, you know, do all that fun stuff, but excuse me.
You don't need to cry, Chelsea. Okay.
No, sorry.
I love you.
It's okay if you didn't have any major life achievements.
Yeah, there weren't that many life achievements. But you know, there's a lot of really great things going on over here in my life, so I'm super happy, and I'm looking forward to the next couple months. Like, we got a lot of really cool things coming up too.
Excellent. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So one thing that we haven't really done very many of, and I'm actually really sad that we haven't, is nerdy couch discussions. And so we wanted to be doing a lot more nerdy couch discussions, but we want to get your guys' feedback and ideas about what nerdy couch discussions we should do. I think it'll be a bit more exciting. So you can always send us an email. We have a new email address that you can email us at. It's contact@rotoscopers.com. And then just say NCD in the title, or if you just in the email mention what you would like us to talk about. I think one thing that we could do is we could talk about just different animated dogs or Disney dogs. Totally unprepared, guys. If you don't want to, that's okay.
No, that's the best part about nerdy couch discussions, is that it's kind of impromptu.
Perfect. Okay. Then take it away, Mason.
I don't know. The first dog that comes to my mind is Gromit. From Wallace and Gromit.
Really? That's the first one that comes to your mind?
Don't judge it, Chelsea.
I don't judge, but it's just that's interesting.
What's the first rule of Nerdy Couch discussion? Don't judge.
I don't judge.
We need to crowdsource our Nerdy Couch discussions, because we've gotten to the point in our relationship when we have nothing to talk about. And so we need our listeners' help. I'm just kidding. Yeah, let's see. Gromit, I don't know, because he's just a... Dogs are usually the good guys, I guess, unless they're wolves. But I like Gromit because he's definitely a hero, but he's like literally an unsung hero because he doesn't speak. He's just always in horrible situations, usually caused by Wallace.
Right.
And I don't know. I just like him because he's got a cool character design and he's really smart. My favorite Gromit scene is where, one, the fact that he always knits. I think that's hilarious. And two, he I love the scene where Feathers McGraw is after him, the penguin chicken thing.
Ah, yes, the creeper.
The creeper, yeah, is after him on the railroad, on the toy train, and Wallace has to lay the tracks down in front of the train so that they can go places. Oh, that's, like, brilliant animation right there. How did they even coordinate that, like, technically? But another one that comes to mind is Courage the Cowardly Dog. Have you guys ever watched that show?
No.
It's a very morbid, very weird show.
You have an interesting lineup of dogs that come to mind.
I was going to say,
what,
like,
did you expect,
Pluto.
Disney?
I was going to say, like, Pluto, Goofy, Max,
Lady and
know,
the Tramp.
Lady Tramp.
Like,
Pongo, Grita, Rolly, Lucky.
This is all those, yeah. Well, that's what makes us such a great, diverse bunch, is that we don't automatically go for the same thing.
You know, why doesn't Disney have face dogs at the park? Actually, I know the reason why, but wouldn't that be really cool if they had, if they brought in a Dalmatian? Like, two Dalmatians, Pongo and Perdita, and you could wait in line, and you could pet Pongo and Perdita.
That would be so cool.
And they bring in, like, an adorable...
Yeah, until they bite.
Until they bite, and...
Whatever.
Until they bite some little kid.
You know, calls PETA and says that they are mistreating them because they're making them stand outside for 4 hours.
You know, PETA is
poor
so
PETA.
Annoying.
He'll never
I'm
have
sorry.
Cabinets.
They're completely overboard. I'm sorry. I'm gonna rant, but I'm gonna stop my rant because this isn't a political show. But for real, like, they're fine outside. Like,
yeah,
they're outdoor animals, especially the horses that I know sometimes. Whatever. Okay.
I totally agree. If they can have horses, if they can have an entire park dedicated to animals, then why can't they have a couple of dogs in line? That's like a really cheap way of expanding your character base in the parks. Because you don't
buy
have
a dog.
Yeah, just buy a Dalmatian.
You don't have to pay have, even like, your dues.
It's true.
If I was in charge of the parks, I would just get 101 Dalmatian puppies and just let them loose in the park.
Oh my gosh.
Puppies everywhere! Or you could have the Siamese cats. You know, you could bring in some cats.
That would be a lot harder.
You could take a picture with Thomas O'Malley. Now we're expanding into cats, but you know, tangents are kind of our specialty on the show.
That's what this should be called, the Dirty Couch Tangent.
Hey, you know, anything goes on the couch. I regret saying that already. Anyway, But yeah, Thomas O'Malley could be this, like, short-haired tabby, you know, with the cute little collar and the little green bow tie.
It's true.
Duchess kittens.
You could have Edgar try to kill him with a pitchfork. I'm just kidding. It's all part of the act, kids. It's all part of the act.
Of other Disney dogs, there's...
This is what would happen if Don Bluth was in charge of Disney World. You would have staged Edgar come out and try to kill him with a pitchfork.
No, those are some other Disney dogs. Lafayette and Napoleon.
Oh, yes. Sweet. I'm the leader. I decide what it was. It was a little cricket bug. I really like those two dogs. There aren't really any dogs in Robin Hood, are there?
Yeah.
Oh, there's Otto.
Yeah, there's Otto. He's, like, got his foot in his
sad cast.
Oh.
Here's one that's, like, an honorable... Here are two honorable mentions. I guess it's a dog. Is the footstool in Beauty and the Beast. Eventually becomes a dog. And then Stitch is referred to and tried to be disguised as a dog.
Oh, that's right.
I have another one. Prince Eric's dog, Max.
Ah, Max.
Oh, Max. I don't know. It looks kind of hairy and slobbery to me.
Yeah.
I have some more.
Max is good.
Bolt.
Yeah, Bolt.
Percy.
Oh, yeah, Bolt.
From Pocahontas.
Oh, Percy from Pocahontas. Percy's great. Talk about character development.
Yeah.
And Little Brother.
Little Brother. Oh.
I'm actually just looking at a photo of Disney dogs. So.
Smart dog. Hey, you're cheating. We never use the internet while we're recording.
Oh, Slinky.
Especially not Wikipedia.
Oh, and the dog from Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah.
Nana.
Nana.
Oh, Nana. That's right. Poor Nana. Poor Nana. Nana.
And we talked last time about Disney Dobermans, right?
Yeah.
There's
right.
In Pixar, Alpha. Then there's the two Dobermans in Oliver and Company, which is chock full of dogs.
Chock full.
Oh, yeah. There's dogs in Oliver and Company. Do you know whose bowl you're eating from?
Georgette.
Oh, Georgette. How do you forget Georgette?
She's the coolest. Oh, and you know what I love Disney dog-wise? I love in 100 Dalmatians, the very beginning scene when he's talking about how the owners look like their dogs.
Uh-huh.
I always loved the poodle, the French poodle and the
oh, and the lady.
Hot girl, yeah.
the fashionable supermodel lady.
Yeah.
So. Oh, I love it.
Oh, Cinderella's dog, Bruno.
Bruno! Did you get him this time? Yo. So, did we establish that goofs are not dogs?
No, they are dogs.
They're just like a special mutant hybrid. I think when we talked about the Goofy movie, that there's something to do with like a chemical spill that mutated all these dogs into a kind
of
sentient beings. But anyway, yeah, that's right. So the whole goof troop are dogs. So does that make Peg Leg Pete a dog?
They're cats.
Peg Leg Pete's a cat? Oh, that's right. He is a cat. I know. I got to work on my Jim Cummings.
We're not doing enough non-Disney dogs. I'm trying to think.
That's what I was trying to start. That's
sorry,
what I was
sorry. I know. Disney's so easy.
It is.
That's true. That's true. There are no dogs in the Shrek series. I'm trying to think of DreamWorks dogs. You know, DreamWorks doesn't really do a lot of dogs.
We do.
Scooby-Doo!
And then Odie
from,
right?
Garfield and Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Odie.
Snoopy. Can't forget.
Snoopy. He's not just a dog. Oh, Mr. Peabody.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
Mr. Peabody, Sherman.
Of course.
And dog from Family Guy. And of course, Santa's little helper from Simpsons.
There you go. Astro from the Jetsons.
Ah. Oh, that's right. His boy, Elroy. Actually, there's a lot of Hanna-Barbera dogs. You know, Scooby-Doo there was a series where, of course, there was Scrappy, which we don't talk about. But there's also Scooby. There's also Scooby-Dum, Scooby-Dum was a cousin, like a country cousin of Scooby's. And he ran around with them for a couple episodes and solved mysteries. And then there was a girl Scooby who was in a few of them also. I forgot what her name was. She was like a Southern Belle kind of dog. Like Scooby had these weird like down on the bayou cousins that
didn't have it. You know, while they were on the bayou, they're all weird.
Yeah, there's that one series where it's like Scooby's like, well, Scooby-Dum just got out of prison, so I should really look after him. Hey, why don't it wouldn't hurt if you came along with us and solved a few mysteries with us? And boy, were they wrong. Scooby-Doo was worse than Scrappy in a few episodes.
That reminds me of the Simpsons episode where the Itchy and Scratchy show, they add a new character, which is Poochie.
Yeah.
And Homer does the voice, so it's the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show. Anyways, he's a total flop, and so they cut him out of the series after a few episodes. And then the way he leaves, I'll find a clip and I'll put it in the show notes, but it's just like Homer didn't even get to record the last lines. He didn't even know that he was being cut out of the show. And it's just like a cell. And he says, I'm going back to my home now in space or whatever. And then the cell just lifts up to the sky. And you can see like the markings of oh, gosh, it's so good.
I want to check it out. Oh my gosh.
You've got Dog from Cat Dog.
Cat Dog!
What about Huckleberry Hound? Oh, Huckleberry Hound.
Oh yeah, and then there's the dog from with the bunions on Rockadoodle.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
And these shoes help my feet.
It's like that's your justification for dogs wearing clothes. I like to all dogs go to heaven where they just inexplicably have full wardrobes.
I love All Dogs Go to Heaven. Well, and then we also have Buster from Toy Story.
Oh, Buster. And then Slink. Slink!
Slinky dog!
I have here my updated official encyclopedia, Disney A to Z, but I think we've covered a lot of the Disney dogs.
Okay, so I was as I was looking on pictures, someone had a dog for Gaston, and I don't even know. So for the Disney,
I love fan mashups.
Yes, let's mash this up. If Gaston could have a dog, what breed of dog would it be?
Well, it had to be a hunting dog.
Yes,
a Great Dane,
like a bloodhound.
Oh, a Great Dane.
I'd put him with a Great Dane.
I don't think Great Danes are hunting dogs, though. Bloodhounds are.
Yeah, bloodhounds.
He needs a bird dog or like a sniffing dog.
Apparently, dachshunds were used as hunting dogs for a while because they could burrow and find burrowing creatures.
I don't imagine him with a dachshund.
Oh.
Who are the dogs that are after the fox in Mary Poppins? What's their breed?
What about Fox and the Hound? We totally forgot two crazy dogs. Those dogs, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know what those are.
Yeah, I don't know much about dogs. Yeah, but anyway, Gaston would have this like cool hunting dog.
What about?
But do you think the dog would be evil, or if he would be like an unwilling follower?
He'd be like an unwilling follower. Gaston's not really evil. He's just crazy. There's a difference.
Yeah, he's just crazy and prejudiced against beasts.
Oh, Lady Bird from King of the Hill.
Oh, yes, that is a very honorable mention. Lady Bird's my dog. Do you guys even know why Lady Bird is named Lady Bird?
No.
After the First Lady.
Yes, after Lady Bird Johnson. Lyndon Baines Johnson's, he's from Texas. Yeah.
Them Texans gotta stick together.
Well, Lady Bird Johnson is more famous than Lyndon Baines Johnson down here. But yeah, there's all sorts of awesome. We'll have to have a King of the Hill discussion, or I'll just do one. I'll do a lecture.
Peter just starts a podcast on his own.
This is the King of the Hill podcast. Anyway.
Anyways, I think that's about enough for this.
No, wait. Buttons from Animaniacs.
I don't even know what Animaniacs is.
What?
Oh, I know what it is. My parents would just never let me watch it.
Wait, what did they have against Animaniacs?
I don't know. My parents didn't like WB as much.
So they were company specific to this.
Yeah. They didn't like WB stuff. Tiny Toons Adventures was like the only thing I could get away with.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Because Kids WB had Pokemon, which my parents were against. And they also had Animaniacs, which my parents were against. Beetlejuice, I think, was WB. One of my favorite cartoons is a WB show. It's the Batman animated series from the 90s.
Right, that one's good.
Yeah. So anyway.
Mr. J?
Oh, Harley Quinn's great.
Yeah, she is. Anyway, let's wrap this couch discussion up.
That's what I was trying to do 10 minutes ago.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, Morgan. So in conclusion, there are a lot of animated dogs. End of discussion.
If you have an animated dog that we didn't talk about, send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com. And let us know about animated dogs, why they're your favorite, why you're your least favorite. If you have animated crossovers like Disney characters, what do you think their dog would be? Let us know.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of The Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why The Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
He tried a life of virtue, but prefer a life of sin. So tonight, man, we own this town.
Yeah, can't keep a good dog down.
So, on to the main event. All dogs go to heaven.
Don Bluth, the acclaimed director of two of the most popular animated films of all time, An American Tale and The Land Before Time, now takes you on his most magical adventure ever. All dogs go to heaven. But only one dog ever came back.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Will you shut up? I'm alive.
Charlie, it's really you.
The story of a canine con artist with a second chance at life who became a little girl's only chance for happiness.
I'm an orphan.
A little girl who talks to animals.
Could you please tell me which one of you is going to win today's race?
All Dogs Go to Heaven, featuring the voices of Dick Tayback.
This is strike two. You're out.
Charles Nelson Reilly.
No, wait, boss, I get one more strike.
Dom DeLuise.
I can't help it, Charlie. I itch when I'm nervous.
Lonnie Anderson.
Hello, Charlie.
And Burt Reynolds as...
Charlie.
You were the best friend I ever had.
You'll help me find a mommy and daddy?
I promise.
Oh, Charlie.
All Dogs Go to Heaven.
So this time for real, we're going on to our main discussion. And like we said, we are discussing the 1989 animated classic by Don Bluth, All Dogs Go to Heaven. This is one of those movies that was like, there was this long gap. Because I know I saw this sometime in kindergarten, but I only like conscientiously saw this movie last summer when I went and saw it at the Alamo Drafthouse in Austin, and Don Bluth and Gary Goldman were there. Actually, they sat right behind us, but I was like too nervous to like turn around and be like, well, howdy, you know. But anyway, Don Bluth and Gary Goldman were there, and after the it was an original 35 millimeter film showing, so the quality was horrible. Well, the quality was terrible. And their voices were like coming out of like a Dairy Queen drive-through window, you know. Anyway, so he and Gary Goldman actually got up and had a Q&A afterward, which was very entertaining. Don Bluth like growled a couple times when the question people asked him about Disney.
I love it
when people, when fans can't get past the fact that Don Bluth broke from Disney. Like, I'm sure he doesn't want to be known as the guy who broke off from Disney. Because there were plenty of people who broke off from Disney.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Don Bluth just happens to have the highest profile because he seems to be pretty successful.
Well, he was also kind of the first.
He was one of the first ones that really tried to make it. Of course, he had, Katzenberg, who broke off in the 90s. But Don Bluth was, like, old school.
Yeah.
Him and Ralph Bakshi, man. Although I wouldn't compare him to Bakshi's level of production and content, but... it was really cool, and I finally got to meet Don Bluth in person after the show. He said that he remembered me from the podcast, but I think he was just trying to be nice. But he talked a lot about you guys. I was like, yeah, I'm part of the Animation Addicts podcast. Morgan and Chelsea's like, oh yeah, those are really nice girls. They came to my house and saw my theater. So he remembered everybody.
Indeed.
And then
nice.
Yeah, I got to meet Gary Goldman, and then people were like, what? What podcast? So I got to do like a quick like plug-in in front of everyone.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of impromptu. I didn't want to steal Don Bluth's thunder there, but it was really nice meeting him. And then I also got some really cool insights on the film, and I wish I'd taken notes, but I remember quite a bit of it for this discussion.
So interesting, we've done a few Don Bluth films over the years because obviously we like them. We've done Rockadoodle. Is that the only one we've ever done?
No, we did Anastasia.
Oh, and Anastasia, of course. Oh. So now we're doing this. I really want to do Land Before Time. Let's do a dinosaur series.
Man, I want Nim.
I want Nim too.
Maybe we'll just do a Don Bluth series.
Don Bluth month.
And interesting, so this movie was animated by his studio, Sullivan Bluth Studios, which is interesting. His studio had three different names at different points in time. It was founded in 1977 when he left Disney as Don Bluth Productions. And then he got an Irish-American business partner named Morris Francis Sullivan, and they changed the name in 1985 to Sullivan Bluth Studios. And that's where they worked with Amblimation to do An American Tale. And then after that, you know, this movie, All Dogs Go to Heaven, was produced in Ireland. That's because Sullivan moved the studio to Dublin, Ireland, because they were able to take advantage of a lot of tax credits and different incentives for producing movies over there. And so they were able to do Land Before Time and then All Dogs Go to Heaven and Rockadoodle. And then the name was changed back to Don Bluth Entertainment in 92 and was moved back to the States. So really interesting, kind of like the history of Don Bluth. Apparently it went defunct in 1995 and Don Bluth no longer was kind of producing his own. He was working for Fox Animation after that. So I don't know. I find Don Bluth's little era very interesting. I think we could do just a nerdy couch discussion on that later on our Don Bluth series.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting that's what happened. This movie had a budget of $13.8 million, which is really interesting because that was very low for the time, I would say. You know, same year Little Mermaid came out, but the movie did well at $27.1 million in the US. So, you know, I loved All Dogs Go to Heaven. I never owned it, but I think it was always on Saturday morning, like afternoon, you know, when they'd show movies on Saturday afternoons. They say Saturday morning, afternoon. Saturday.
Hey, we get it.
Saturday afternoon. It seems like that's what the local channels would do, is they'd show a movie. And it seemed like All Dogs Go to Heaven was always on. So that's kind of how I was able to see this movie all the time. And I always really enjoyed it as a youngin. As a youngin.
Yes.
Different than youngster.
Well, we did have this on
just
VHS.
Kidding. Of course you did.
Well, the thing about the VHS is that it ended up becoming one of the biggest selling VHS releases ever due to apparently an effective marketing program for the release. We never had All Dogs Go to Heaven on VHS, but all my friends did. I guess that's called a sleeper hit or I don't know what you call them, where it doesn't do as well. But then like years later, when there's like a re-release, it does really well. People like rediscovered it, you know.
Yes.
I'd say this is one of the most more popular Don Bluth films besides Land Before Time.
Yeah, what would you rank the most popular Don Bluth films?
Oh, An American Tale?
Anastasia, obviously. Then I think maybe Tale?
I think people forget that Anastasia is Don Bluth. But yeah, I would say.
The people don't forget. Like, we're talking Don Bluth fans here.
Right, right.
Not people who think Anastasia is a Disney movie, like our writer Pablo.
Oh, Pablo.
If you don't get it, that's like a long-running joke in all of his articles that Anastasia is a Disney movie and that Rasputin is a Disney villain. And so in every article, even if it's not Anastasia or Don Bluth related, he puts that in there. And it drives people insane because people will just like stumble on the website and they'll read that. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, Anastasia is not a Disney movie. And it's hilarious. And I don't even care. I don't care because I'm like, these articles are meant for real fans who actually get the joke and have been longtime readers. So, you know, it's kind of our way that we can filter out the good guys from the new guys.
People are flagging his articles as inappropriate because of it. If he could, you know. Oh, that's funny. Well, I'd say All Dogs Go to Heaven for like the grew up in the 90s crowd.
Yeah.
People like us, that All Dogs Go to Heaven is a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Like pretty much every year in elementary school, we'd watch this film, or at least parts of it. So this was released the same year as Kiki's Delivery Service, Little Nemo, and Wallace and Gromit's A Grand Day Out. But most importantly, it was also released at the same time as The Little Mermaid.
Ouch.
So, yeah.
It's kind of like every film that was released in the wake of Frozen, I just felt bad for.
Well, when you have a re-release literally 3 weeks after the end of your original theatrical release, it's hard for everyone.
Yeah.
focus back to the domain discussion.
Anyway, all right, back to all
But yeah, it's a good point. It is hard to compete with Disney. I had to wonder, did Don Bluth choose this release date, or did Disney choose their release date, or if that was just a popular week to release?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But I do know, interesting,
or something else.
To promote this movie in 1987, so 2 years before it came out, John Pomeroy, who was part of the heads of Don Bluth Studio, went to the San Diego Comic-Con in 1987 to generate some early buzz for the film. Just awesome.
Really?
I would love to go to Comic-Con in San Diego in 1987.
For real.
Guys, it's an Amigo Commodore 64. It's a DOS system. It's an interactive CD-ROM from Jurassic Park. It's a Unix system. I know this.
So, okay. Obviously, we talked a little bit about the release. It did okay, but it really generated, like, with $27 million in North America. But that was actually half of what American Tail and Land Before Time took in. So, at the time, it was kind of considered a disappointment, even though it made back its budget, just because, you know, it did half as well as the prior two films, which is sad, because this movie, like Mason said, is kind of a sleeper hit. It did really well home media release after the fact.
Right from the get-go, the film is very, it's pretty dark. Prison escape. This is a kid's movie. What are we doing in prison?
I know. That's one thing, as I was watching this time, I was like, wow, I really forgot just generally how dark the movie is. And it's kind of really confusing also. Like, I guess when I was younger, like, I had a hard time understanding what was going on, because it kind of just jump at the beginning. You know, there's breaking out of jail, and then there's, you know, the rat races, and then Mardi Gras. You know, it's set in New Orleans, but, you know, me being a 3-year-old at the time had no idea the difference of the geographic areas of the U.S.
Oh, right.
And cultural significance of this.
Yes. You know, so there's, like, a Mardi Gras party, and that meant nothing to me as a child.
Right. Well, and also a lot of the buildup as far as story development was in signs and just little things that you'd have to read. And so that was another thing. Like, when you're that young, it's like, I don't know what's going on. Mom's not here to tell me.
Mom, what does that read? What does that say?
But I still loved this movie, even though it was kind of like maybe a little too above me.
Yeah, as a child, I didn't really understand the darker elements and themes like gambling, drinking, corruption.
Can I just say, I love that this movie has this. I love that there's smoking, gambling, drinking, which goes against
good everything. Good old American qualities.
It goes against everything that I stand for in my own life.
True.
But I like that they had it in an animated film, because I know that animated films are supposed to be seen as squeaky clean and, you know, you're very impressionable to the children. Okay, this movie never made me want to drink, never made me have any interest in smoking or gambling. You know, it's...
If anything, it talks about the dangers. It's like, don't let a friend get you drunk, because then he'll plow you over with a car.
Exactly. Like,
but that's what Don Bluth could do and get away with, because he wasn't squeaky clean Disney. He was, you know, Don Bluth, which was, especially in this movie, darker and more mature, not in a, you know, Ralph Bakshi sort of way, but it was refreshing to see that, actually. And that, you know, there wasn't any concern of, like, smoking.
My kids are being exposed.
There was, though, because the very first edit of this was actually given a PG rating. And it was just this huge thing for them, because it's like, it can't be PG, because then parents won't actually take their kids to see it. And that's all of our audience. And so they had to cut a bunch of things. So one thing that they had to cut was the first scene where Charlie is actually killed by the car. The original was, like, a lot more graphic, and it actually showed Charlie's body flying off the pier and into the river. And then another one later on, when, like, Charlie has the vision of hell coming at him, like all these demons kind of pulling at him, that was longer and more intense. But there's a lot of things that they had to edit to get. So,
but those don't seem like we had, you know, someone smoking, so we have to cut it out.
Yeah.
Those are more just, like, too intense for little children.
Yeah.
But
there does apparently exist a unedited print of the film that's in Don Bluth's possession. Yeah. Hey, y'all are friends with him.
I'm going to his house right now.
Why don't you go ask him for it? Say, Donnie.
Hey, Don.
But this brings up a point that I wanted to discuss, how watching this film, because I remember when I, at the Alamo Drafthouse Q&A, Don Bluth was like, well, we broke off from Disney because I felt that Disney wasn't providing good family entertainment, and I broke off to provide that. And then after watching All Dogs Go to Heaven, you know, I'm like, family entertaining and entertainment. I just watched a bunch of gambling, a bunch of drinking, dogs being murdered. I think it goes deeper than that. I think Don Bluth simply wanted real creative freedom to do what he wanted with animation. I did my research, and Land Before Time and American Tail were executive produced by Amblin Entertainment, which we're familiar with because of Balto. So that was executive producers Spielberg and George Lucas. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. But he apparently broke off from them to produce this film because he thought that they were too controlling. So you got to hand it to Don Bluth for actually turning down the producer input, which he called control, from Spielberg and George Lucas themselves in order to really do what he wanted. So this is like the independent animator spirit here. So I do respect that there is a lot of vice that we get exposed to in this film that's supposedly a kid's film or a family film. I don't know. It's just very different. And I had to kind of put all those pieces together. So I don't know if you guys feel the same, but that to me is kind of the puzzle that I put together from all this.
Well, let's say those are some of the reasons why I've always loved Don Bluth films, just generally. They're just so different. And I love Disney to death. Don't get me wrong. Disney is life. But it was just kind of, it's funny to say refreshing because his films are darker for the most part, but they are. They're refreshing.
Dog gambling.
Just because it's a different perspective and a different take. And, you know, as an animation fan, I always loved that even when I was younger. That's why, you know, even though Don Bluth technically isn't around anymore, we still have him in our name. Disney Dreamworks, Pixar, Don Bluth and everything in between. Like,
I know.
It's just like paying homage to him as how much he means to us as animation fans. Even though to most people, he's probably non-existent, you know, currently.
Yeah. So we love you, Don.
We do.
I was reading some reviews on Amazon for the DVD. And I love it when reviewers online, they judge the subject matter of the movie and not the actual DVD product. I love to read why people don't like movies. One user said that they were disturbed by how many times the word stupid is used in the film, and they felt uncomfortable watching it with their kids. I don't even remember an instance where they even say the word stupid in this film. I'm sure they do say it a lot. I don't really know about that. Like, I use the word stupid in my daily life at least 1,000 times a day, thanks to 90s animation. And I turned out great. You know?
We're that calloused.
Seriously, stupid Amazon customer. They care too much about the word stupid. They're stupid. Have you ever seen that Dexter's Laboratory episode where they keep saying, and you know what? You are stupid. Anyway, it's on Dexter's Laboratory on Netflix.
So, let's talk about the voice cast, because I really liked the voice cast for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Burt Reynolds plays Charlie, which Charlie's official name is Charlie Babarkin.
I like it.
He is a German Shepherd mix, so basically a mutt. And they designed the character with Reynolds in mind for the role, and they sort of mimic some of his mannerisms. And I, you know, we were talking about Balto and how Balto's voice didn't fit Balto's character. It was too gruff and gritty, like, hey, Jenna, hey, gotta save
I'm gonna
children.
Save the children.
And it didn't work for me, but Burt Reynolds' voice as Charlie, it was gritty. It was kind of the same things that we were faulting Balto for, but it worked here because Charlie was sort of a shady character from the beginning, while Balto was always this hero.
Yeah.
So,
I totally agree. You know, at the Q&A at Alamo Drafthouse, Don Bluth said that Burt Reynolds came in having because he was like, oh, this is a cartoon, so I get to be all crazy. He had all these dog voices prepared, like voices that sound like a dog. I think it's so cute when real life, non-animation, non-voice actors don't get animation at all. It's so cute. But Don was talking about how he started talking, and I was just like, And Tom Bluth was like, what the heck are you doing? just do your normal voice. That's why we cast you in the first place.
Nice.
But anyway, aww. That's just a little tidbit on
Burt Reynolds.
He probably
spent all this time trying to get there.
And then I think at some point Reynolds like insisted that they had Don DeLuise be brought in as his counterpart because they had done films together. And they kind of worked well as a comedy duo.
Don DeLuise played Itchy in this movie. And he's a dachshund who's crazy. And he's done a lot of voices for Don Bluth films. Secret of Nim, who's Jeremy in American Tell, Tiger.
Tiger.
Troll in Central Park, Stanley. He played in the sequels for American Tale and Secret of Nim 2 and All Dogs Christmas Carol, whatever. But yeah, he's done actually quite a bit for Don. It was kind of like one of his go-to, sort of like his John Ratzenberger.
Right.
Yeah.
He did have quite a few of the same people throughout a lot of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
I love Itchy because I like his character design because this is the late 80s and you have to have a character wearing, quote-unquote hip clothes. You know, he's got the sleeveless shirt going on. He's got the baseball cap.
Yes. Oh gosh, which doesn't fit his personality at all.
It really doesn't.
It's just the era.
He needed to be a little more hip hop if he was going to wear the.
It's true.
Those clothes.
We have to talk about the voice of Anne Marie.
Yeah.
Which is so sad, but her was played by a young girl named Judith Barcy. This was her final role before she died in 1988. So the movie hadn't even, they still had a year left before it was released. And she was tragically murdered by her father, right?
By her father.
Yeah, it was a murder-suicide. And so he ended up killing her and her mother and then killed himself and, burned down their house. It was
my gosh.
People.
Yeah,
that's
it was
so
really
go to jail for being losers.
Yeah. And the thing is, Don always, I read an interview with him where he just talked about how it nearly paralyzed them because they all had tape recorders of her voice so that they could help with animation, and none of them could listen to it for a while, and they just had to stop everything for a couple weeks, just to be able to not have that.
No Anne Marie scenes.
Yeah, it's just don't even do it. Don't go there. And apparently that same day, once he heard about it, he couldn't even stay in the studio. He had to just leave. He had to just go.
So tragic.
Yeah.
Can't even imagine. Can't even imagine.
This is a year before it came out, and they were going to be using her a lot in the promotions of this movie because Burt Reynolds' contract is that he made one stipulation is that they could not use him to promote the film. And they could not use his
name,
which was great. Now what? And so
what a jerk.
Focus on her, and now they can't do that. It's just really sad.
My gosh, there's also this weird tragic story about the archives being thrown away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was reading on this is apparently in my research. I was reading on the Facebook page. Morgan actually showed this to me a year ago or so when. This guy, his name is Daryl Gilley, he got on the Don Bluth Films Facebook page and asked if he could get, he said he was the announcer voice in All Dogs Go to Heaven for the rat race scene. He said that I just really want a cell of that character that I voiced. Do you happen to have any? And then later on they said, sorry, we don't, we'll look and see if we can find anything that we have, and if we do, we'll give it to you. But, I mean, this was a direct reply from either Don or Gary. And he said that we donated all of our animation archives to the Savannah College of Art and Design back in 2005. Also, the financing company for All Dogs Go to Heaven demanded the return of all of the work, which we did. Then they decided that it was too expensive to store and either destroyed it or had it just taken to the dump. What a shame.
This is a financing company. Don't they understand how valuable these
yeah.
are? You don't just throw things away. You save them.
And you sell them on eBay.
Piece them out. Okay, if you don't want to store them, sell them there. Have an auction.
Yeah.
But you're literally putting money in the trash.
Yeah.
Why did they demand to have the archives returned from a museum?
I think... No.
Or to the from the college.
They didn't.
This was before... This was back in the 90s, before any of this stuff was donated to the college. After the movie was finished around 89, since they basically provided all the financing for the film, they technically own the film and everything that belongs to it. And I guess for some reason they said, this film is our property, we get all the sales. And there's nothing you can do about it because they financed your film. If Don Bluth had financed it himself, he would get to keep them. But and then they were just really lame and threw it all away. It's like, you're just going to throw it away. Why don't you give it back?
Yeah.
That's such a waste. Like, that. Yet another tragic story about this movie.
Sad,
it's just throwing that stuff away is like throwing away like pieces of history.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Bad things.
Real.
All right, anyway, back to the movie. They break out of jail, and people say that the plot is disjointed, but I don't really think it is. Like, I understand, like, where all this is going. Like, Charlie had a casino, you know, a dog casino, you know, because I can wrap my head around that.
Sure.
And evil Carface dog, we find out that, oh, spoiler alert, he was kind of the reason why Charlie was on death row in the first place. So he wants to get rid of him. And I forget where all the songs come in during all this.
Well, they all have, like, little moments, and I thought they fit, for the most part, as far as, like, how they segued into them. Like, for example, you go into a bar, and then they all just start, you know, doing a drinking song. And so that's the song, You Can't Keep a Good Dog Down.
And I love that song.
It's a good one.
You can't keep a good dog down.
Oh, no.
Can't keep a good dog down.
Robin. Yeah, the words to it are actually really clever, too.
Yeah. What did y'all think about the scene of Charlie getting splattered by Carface?
You mean when he gets hit by the car?
Yeah, like, what did you think?
Very bold move. I like that he had to die, I guess.
What are you
going for?
I just think I think the whole sequence is creepy.
Oh.
He's like drunk and he doesn't even know what's going on, poor guy. He's like singing and dancing the whole time. I think one of the reasons why we kids thought this was a cool movie was that it was probably the only popular animated film where you see heaven. Like, where the movie actually takes you there. But it's like doggy heaven, you know?
Yeah. I really like this movie because you do see the two sides. You see heaven, which you never see. Like, we never go there. And then parts of Diablo, you know? The depths of hell.
There you go. Yeah, totally. And so the film really does have this, like, spiritual side to it. And at the Q&A, Don Bluth did talk about, I think he talked about an experience he had when he was a kid about a dog that died in his family. And his parents, you know, explained that, you know, according to their beliefs, that there is a place in heaven for animals and that he didn't have to worry. And so, you know, Don Bluth definitely grew up with this concept of finding your family again in heaven after you die. And so he did cite that as part of the inspiration for this movie, which I thought was really cool. And I think why this movie appeals is that, one, you get to see these cool scenes of heaven and these highly spiritual scenes. But at the same time, it delves into that question, like, do we see our beloved family pets because they're part of our family, you know? So I thought that was a cool little detail.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven is kind of funny, though.
It's really cool.
In this movie.
I love the color scheme of heaven.
Cotton candy, you mean?
Yeah, lots of cotton candy everywhere.
It's better than I ever dreamed it was.
Welcome to doing whatever you wish.
Yeah.
That's
Doggy
a good
Heaven's
song.
Great.
That's another good song. I love that Whippet. She's super cute. She's pink. And she's like one of the standouts of this movie. When I think of All Dogs Get Heaven, I think of her singing and her line, "You could never go back."
Yeah.
I think with all these dog episodes, we've been quoting that a lot.
Yeah. The listeners are probably like, oh, we get it. You can never go back. Got it. I never want to go back to this episode. Thank you.
Fast forward.
Dogs are naturally loyal and loving and kind.
I guess. Then what about Carface and his cronies?
Carface is disgusting.
Pretty bad.
Nobody used a Carface.
I like his line. I like his line where he's like, what? 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 So funny. 90s
that,
animation.
His, like, henchman dog is also kind of gross.
Aw, killer.
He has, like, this studded collar, which really doesn't, but then these huge glasses. So I'm not quite sure what to make out of this guy. And then he's just kind of like a loser,
he's not as tough and mean. Yeah, he's not a real killer. He's just a bookie.
So this is jumping like way ahead, but that family of dogs that's like orphans and they just make me laugh. I don't know if they're all her kids, which they're not because they're all different breeds, but
yeah, you never know.
It's just, you know, your typical like super poor family that has way too many kids than they can afford, you know, so let's bring them pizza. These are the poorest dogs I know.
They're more broke than the Ten Commandments. Best line ever. I love the dogs eating all that gooey cheese on the pizza.
Ah, yeah, that is a good scene.
It is.
Yeah, I like that. That's good animation. That's cute. Cracks me up. Cracks me up every time. Yeah, totally.
But so this movie actually had really interesting visuals. Like we talked about heaven. There's the pirate ship house, Mardi Gras. Like it's all over the place. Like it doesn't really make sense. That this could be in a real world. It's just very bonkers.
Unless if you've never been to like the southeastern United States where all these things are kind of conjoined together. Yeah, it is a little confusing.
I didn't understand it until this last year. When
pirate ship houses are real?
Yeah, they're all over the place. Go down to Shipwreck. It's a seafood place in College Station.
Yeah.
From Galveston to Florida, pirate ship houses are everywhere. It's a huge thing. Trust me on that one.
It's like Arizona's version of the like retirement communities. There's just a million RV parks, basically. And they're everywhere. That's what it is down here.
It's all pirates. We're giving our listeners in like India and in England a really really false image of the United States.
It's true.
The South is all pirates. Stay out.
Arg.
I don't know. I didn't think that the plot like jumped around randomly because I understand the context of all the environments of the film. But yeah, it is kind of weird. The horse show, the Mardi Gras thing. But yeah.
Well, and the thing with Anne Marie is that she can talk to animals.
That's right.
Animals. Disgusting.
She should hang out with Eliza Thornberry.
I feel like there's a lot of characters that can talk with animals. I'm trying to think of other ones that...
Well, there's some movies where they inexplicably can talk to animals. And then there's one... And then there's shows where it's a huge deal that they can talk to animals.
Mm-hmm. Can't think of any off the top
of my head.
Can't
think of any... Yeah, me neither.
Dr. Doolittle?
Yeah, well, right. I feel like there's an animated movie where a character can talk to animals. But I may be wrong.
I think Anne Marie looks like a mini Snow White.
Yes!
She's got that color scheme.
Yes, she has the little black bob. Completely adorable. Her clothes, same sort of color scheme. She has like a yellow bow, right, in her hair, like a headband. And then the red and blue rags, which I'm like, oh my gosh, was this purposefully done or coincidence? Because you are Snow White.
It wasn't. Hello.
Red,
blue, and yellow are also recognizable childlike colors because they're the primary colors.
So here's why. So Burt Reynolds' wife actually played the voice of the collie, Flo. And according to Reynolds, she grew up wanting to be an animator. And it was just one of those things that was really important to her. And her favorite heroine was Disney's Snow White. And then later when she was doing the voices for it, she was just always all about Snow White. And so in order to kind of like ode to her, they put a lot of Snow White's image into Anne Marie.
Man, they really pandered to Burt Reynolds here.
Right?
It really...
this movie.
And they couldn't even do anything with it.
Hey. Well, that's pretty fascinating. So that's why she looks like a mini Snow White.
Yeah.
Well, she's friggin' adorable, okay? We need to do a YouTube video of top animated kids.
Oh.
I think she would be up on the list.
Children. The other one would be Russell.
Aw, Russell. Up. True.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Russell. Anyway, her animation's okay. I feel like she's very highly rotoscoped. But that just means that the kid who did the live footage was cute, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of rotoscoping going on. But that's kind of normal with background characters in Bluth films. But especially I felt like... Okay, you know the film where they're pandering for money at the horse races?
Yeah.
And everyone's just, like, wandering by them. I feel like that's, like, a very classic Bluth scene. I feel like I've seen that scene in Anastasia somewhere and a few other movies, but that's kind of, like, I don't know. When I see that, that typifies Don Bluth to me. Like, rotoscope characters all over the place with the main character.
Yeah.
Middle.
When I think of this movie, I think of her dressing up as a mustached man and getting the horse race betting ticket.
Reminds me of Little Rascals.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like to take out a hefty load.
I need
your account number.
I love the 90s because the story of 90s entertainment is the story of kids out-duping really stupid adults. You know, kids rule, you know, that mentality.
Oh, that's a great scene when she dresses up like an adult and she's standing on Charlie with the mustache. And I always wonder, I'm like, okay, so you were able to buy the tickets. You lucked out this one time. But how are you going to cash in your tickets for that much money? I don't know.
Yeah.
But the great thing about Anne Marie is that she's really sort of the moral compass, because Charlie isn't. He's just doing anything.
He's horrible, totally exploiting this little girl.
Yep. And he just wants to earn a lot of money, get his casino back, and to, you know, rub it in Scarface's face. But she's always the voice of reason. Like, when she finds out that the wallet was stolen from that cute, adorable a childless couple.
Oh, they're so great.
And she's like, Charlie, you stole this? She just gets really worked up.
This is part of Charlie's story arc. It just breaks your heart in some places. When she calls Charlie a bad dog, that was like totally broke my heart.
Yeah, that's probably the worst.
Kind of like when Carl called Doug a bad dog in Up. That's like the worst. If you're a dog, that's the last thing you want to ever hear. You do not want to be called a bad dog. It's the lowest you can get. I don't know. That was kind of the message I got out of this film. Like, Charlie, throughout the film, he doesn't really change. But you want him to change. He's totally enveloped in the vices of the world, like all the gambling, all the corruption, until he meets this little girl who needs him because she's an orphan. She needs him to be a good dog, aka, you know, man's best friend and all that. And so I like it. This was kind of one of the big messages I got from the film is like, how do we solve the problems of people getting involved in like violence and drinking, gambling, corruption, all that stuff? You strengthen the family, duh. Like, just a little family love, you know? And that's why animation is so great, is that they can tell these stories and tell these messages in such an entertaining way.
Yeah. I have nothing to add. That was really great.
So that's about it. But yeah. Because like, Charlie is a bad dog.
He is.
Like, he's totally using her throughout the whole film.
He's disgusting. Almost as disgusting as Scarface.
But at the same time, we're totally rooting for him the whole time. A, because there's no one else in the movie. And B, because it's quality animation, I believe, because part of animation is one of the 12 principles is character appeal. And good character appeal is getting the audience to care about a seemingly unredeemable or irredeemable character. Because Charlie's heading he's never headed in the right direction in this film. Like, he kind of cares for her, like that the scene where he's trying to get her to shut up and sleep in the back of the car.
Oh.
It's gold. And at the very end, she's like, Charlie, what? I have to go to the bathroom.
It's so true. With kids, it never ends. You think, okay, we got it. We're moving on. And there's something else.
You have to go to the bathroom.
So, question. So when Charlie goes to heaven the first time, that was an accident? He wasn't supposed to be there? Because clearly at that point in time, he did nothing to deserve to be in heaven.
Like, besides being a dog.
So how'd he get there? She was looking through the books, so she's like, I don't see your name here.
Oh. Well, it's the doctrine of the film that all dogs are heaven.
Yeah. Even you know, if you are a horrible because later Carface goes at the end.
The title, Morgan? The title of the film.
I get it. That was a total relapse.
Well, that was a really hard doctrine for me to swallow, too, this concept of all dogs going to heaven by default. Like, because why does Carface get to go to heaven? Surely he did.
The robes!
I know. And I love how he hates it there. So I'm like, ha, good. I'm glad that you can't be happy in heaven.
Well, that is another eternal principle.
Sure.
It really is. and then I guess he's trying to steal his pocket. And the whole thing with the pocket watch, you know, I like how Charlie's like, oh, sweet, a watch that'll take me back and that'll take me back to life. Steal. Wind. I love characters that totally say to heck with your established rules. I'm going to make my own rules. But yeah, it's this weird doggy doctrine in this film that all dogs go to heaven. I think Carface should have gone to doggy hell.
Well, he does, because he winds himself back up, and then he can't come back, so he will.
Well, Charlie went back. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but then he redeemed himself at the end.
He redeemed himself by sacrificing himself.
I guess.
In the end, All Dogs Go to Heaven has great character development for Charlie. Because, like, in the beginning, he's definitely, okay, putting it lightly, he's not a fantastic role model for kids. You know, but like I said, we still push for him and root for him because he has we see the potential to help out the little orphan girl, which is good. You know, and we all want to see him succeed and change. And then you have your quintessential part where the character usually lives this, like, big lie. You know, Aladdin comes to mind. You know, Mulan, where you always get that iconic scene where they're like, "You lied to me," you know, and that's when they start their big downward descent. Mm-hmm. You know, but in the end, he's redeemed, and the element of redemption and real spiritual change is very classic with character development. And while I don't judge animated films solely on character development, I think this is really solid in All Dogs Go to Heaven. Like, you can say what you want about the songs or, like, the quality of animation.
I say nothing negative about the songs, FYI.
Okay. Morgan, you can hate on those songs all you want. I guess we don't have anything to say about the songs, but, like, there is this element of redemption, and it's literally on a spiritual level, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that. As for the songs go, like, when you compare them to something like Little Mermaid, which everybody was doing at the time, obviously, yeah. They're not going to come up quite to that level. But in and of themselves, in their place, I like them. I think they're fun.
So yeah, they're not masterpieces, but they're fun and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no Spirit where it's like, we have to have a song every 5 seconds.
Oh, yikes.
Look into my eyes. Do-do-do-do-do. Anyway. Oh, Rob Thomas on the brain. So yeah, I think in the end, All Dogs Go to Heaven is pretty cool. It's also got your classic sassy fat alligator.
That I was gonna say, we can't end this without talking about him. Like,
why does there always have to be a sassy fat alligator in an animated movie?
I have no idea where he comes from, why he's needed into the plot, except for the fact that he does release Charlie from the weight of the anchor at the very end. But, like, there's nothing else other than...
Totally.
He does eat Carface, so I guess there's that.
When he's introduced at the beginning and he's singing his song, I'm just like, what is going on? I was okay with everything else that had happened in this movie, but this just took it too far. What is happening here? So, and then, you know, then he disappears, and then...
Together, baby.
Well, then he disappears, and then he only returns just to conveniently, like, tie up some loose ends of the plot, which I guess that was one thing I didn't like about this movie, was that guy. Like, he was funny, but I was just, when he appeared, I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, totally. Who was the Bayou alligator in Princess and the Frog?
Lewis,
that's right, Lewis. Maybe this is, like, a cousin of Lewis's, or maybe this is Lewis before he, like... You know, turned from singing to trumpet playing, you know, because it is in the same locale. It is in New Orleans.
And I think that's one of the main things that I thought of when I first saw Princess and the Frog. I was like, it's totally All Dogs Go to Heaven guy.
Okay, so final thoughts, everybody.
Final thoughts.
I can go first. I grew up loving this movie. Like, there's a lot of good things in it, and there's a lot of things that are like, yeah, that's probably not like the most triumphant, awesome animated movie ever. It's not. But it was good. And it was one of those movies that I continuously watched as a kid. Don DeLuise really made me happy a lot. I would give this movie 3.5 stars on a critical, just because of the enjoyment level and the replay value. Non-critical level, I would probably do it more just because of the replay value. But I'll just go with 3.5.
I also will give it 3.5. Like Chelsea said, grew up loving this movie. When I watched it again, it didn't lose any of its charm that it had when I initially watched it, you know, 20 years ago. It just was very enjoyable. Characters were interesting. I like Charlie. I love Anne-Marie. I love the juxtaposition between how just diabolical Charlie is and how pure, sweet, and innocent Anne-Marie is. And I like where both of their lines go, their plot lines through this movie. I thought it's fun. It's interesting. The songs, surprisingly, you know, were another thing that they're not masterpieces, but they're fun to listen to, which I like. And so, yeah, 3.5 stars.
All right. Yeah. I can't give this a 3-star and I can't give it a 4-star. So I'll do 3.5 stars along with you guys. That seems to be a really comfortable rating for this film. Cause I do like the tale, the character arc of redemption for Charlie. Like it's always good. It's always good to see that, that even the rottenest, nastiest people can change. And it usually, you know, loving a child is the key to doing that. And to me, that's a principle that needs to be brought up more. And animation is the perfect vehicle to drive that message home. And I thought that Don Bluth did a really good job being independent from other studio influences. Like, I think that's an achievement in itself that he got to have some real creative freedom with this film. And, you know, maybe someday we'll get to see the uncut version of All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Ooh.
I think Itchy is adorable. He's probably one of my favorite parts of this film. And Anne-Marie's great. So yeah, 3.5 stars. It's definitely a solid animated film. It's definitely an animated like icon or like staple from the 90s, late 80s, you know?
Totally. Totally, totally. Okay, let's move into our mailbag segment. So most of these emails are from people referring to our Up episode. They sent it in slightly a bit too late, so they weren't able to get onto our Up episode. And then people talking about our dog series. So let's jump right into it. The first one is from Mike. He says, "Hey guys, since you're discussing Pixar's Up in your upcoming podcast, I was hoping you could answer a question that bugged me since I first saw the movie. Why are Carl and Russell spending the whole second half of the movie trying to keep Muntz from capturing Kevin? Didn't Muntz merely want to transport Kevin to the U.S. alive just to redeem himself? Not like he was going to kill the bird. Way to treat your hero, Carl. Am I missing something? What are your thoughts? Also, I thought you'd be interested in hearing about a California couple who turned their house into a duplicate of the one featured in this film. Keep up the great work, you animation explorers. And remember, adventure is out there. Mike."
Thanks, Mike.
He's so right about Muntz, like capturing Kevin.
Yeah, one would ask why. What the big deal is? The thing is that Kevin has a family. He's got his babies, her babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Kevin's a girl, so you can't have that. But at the same time, it's like Carl. I think to me it was like Carl unknowingly getting attached to Russell. Mm-hmm. Informing like a family bond already, and he doesn't know it, and so he just kind of gets whisked away into helping Russell because Russell wants to help Kevin, and then he also has incentive because Russell like flat out runs away to go help Kevin.
Uh-huh.
Because in the second half of the film, Carl doesn't care about Kevin.
Yes.
He doesn't care that Muntz has captured him, but Russell's like, "I'm gonna save him if you're not," and that's when Carl has his huge catharsis about the potential of him to move on and have his own adventure. And that kind of sets everything straight in his head and he goes off and he does the right thing. I don't know if I got the chronology right there, but that's kind of my take on it.
I like your points. And then referring to the Up house, this is an interesting article. There was a family in California that painted their house exactly like the Up house. They live on a very historic street with a lot of Victorian homes. And they just, you know, I think their kids kind of, they wanted to make their children happy. And so they kind of said, "Oh, well, let's paint our house like the Up house." And so they did. And it kind of created all this controversy because people are saying, these are historic films, or these are historic homes. I can't believe you're creating such a travesty out of them. Like, this is disgusting. It's ugly. It's an eyesore. It's going to cause house prices to go down, blah, 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 blah.
What? It's going to cause house prices to go up. Think of the selfies in front of that house.
For real. Yeah, it's true.
That only helps if they are able to charge for the selfies.
Well, does this family own the house or are they renters?
Yeah, they own the house.
Well, then what's the problem, California? Yeah, anyway.
Well,
I'll stop.
This is one thing we didn't talk about in the Up episode is how there actually is a replica of the Carl and Ellie house in Utah. It was sort of a promotion that a home builder did. And none of the other houses in this neighborhood look like this, but just there's one house in the neighborhood that they designed specifically to, you know, they contacted Pixar. They were able to work with the company and do like an official promotion, and they built the house. And the family that lives in the house now, they're huge Pixar fans. Like, it's a dream come true to be living in it. And the Pixar podcast actually did an interview with them. So I will include that link in the show notes because that's pretty neat.
Classy.
But pretty cool that that exists in an official form and then with this one California house unofficially.
This one is from Sarah. She says, "Hey, Rotoscopers, I can't wait for your Up review. I would have thought of you guys doing Lady and the Tramp instead, but I guess it works because of Doug. I am, however, a little surprised that you guys didn't have Whitney play Catch and Fire in your last Unicron review. Oh, well, maybe next time. Anyways, on to my two questions. First question is for Chelsea. Did you audition for the Gem and the Holograms movie? Chelsea, did you?
I did not. I'm sorry to say I did not.
Hey, maybe in the sequel, right?
Yeah, maybe.
All right. I could see you doing like a cosplay or, you know what we should do? We should do Rotoscopers cosplays. We would attract so many people. Anyway, I could be
cosplay is all about. It's all about cosplay these days. Like, there's so many YouTube people who do cosplays.
It really is. I should be a hiccup. Yeah, we're training these dragons, Dad. Anyway, since Morgan, Sarah goes on. Since Morgan missed the Meet the Robinsons review, Chelsea with Tangled, and of course Mason with Hercules. Will there be separate reviews of the films you didn't do on the podcast or on the YouTube channel? Especially Mason's review of Hercules. Jeez, I didn't realize I would cause such ripples not being on the Hercules episode. And Sarah was kind enough to point out all the episodes where we were not present for certain episodes. I never thought we would have such attentive fans. So, but yeah, Sarah,
we're always watching you.
Always watching Wazowski. Anyway, wow, I didn't realize I was gone for so many episodes. I'm kind of ashamed. Sarah, thank you for caring. We love to be on as many episodes as possible. Unfortunately, sometimes due to scheduling and other stuff, we're not able to be there. But thankfully, we have excellent roto writers to fill in for us when they need to. I mean, aside from the occasional anecdote and comment or mini discussion on films that we missed, I don't think we're going to go back and do separate episodes. So sorry.
Maybe if it comes out on Blu-ray, then that'll be our chance.
Also, you will note that she listed all the episodes, and then the Hercules episode that I missed is in italics and has an asterisk. So apparently someone was really offended that I wasn't on the Hercules episode.
So Mason, give us your mini review of Hercules right now. Even though you've never finished seeing the movie.
I've never finished watching Hercules.
Oh, gosh. That's enough said, okay?
I think Hercules on an animation and comedy level is on level with Emperor's New Groove, which is a good thing. I love all the... they managed to turn mythology references into pop culture references. Like, mythology references are the pop culture references in the world of Hercules, which I think is brilliant. It really defines a really cool like universe in the film. Of course, and then you got I Can Go the Distance, which is a very popular Disney song. And I really like the character design. The character design is very it really displays the power and majesty of Greek mythological figures. So I think it's a good film. I'm sure if I saw it all the way through, I would give it probably give it a 4.5 stars. Oh, and I love Hades. My gosh, I want to be just like him. I mean, not like go to hell or anything, but like, I think he's really cool. So yeah, I that's my mini review. I think it's a really good film. I'd have to go back and watch it. I've seen it in its entirety, but it was like back in high school and I wasn't paying attention, or, you know, we ended up watching it over a period of 3 days. So it was all lost, but
we'll do a live rewatch one of these days.
Dude, those are going to be bombing.
Google Hangout. It'll be awesome.
Our next email is from Leanne, and she says, "Hi, Rotoscopers, listener since day one." I really like the fact that she says that. "And I wanted to say how awesome you all are and how your podcasts get me through my commute and long hours in the lab with a smile. Up is my personal favorite Pixar movie because of how touching, poignant, and on the flip side, how fun and funny it is. There's no character in the film that I don't love. From the antagonist to the protagonist, everyone is memorable and it hits you right in the feels as it should. I remember watching it the first time and feeling so mad at how, yet again, the married life scene started the movie off with me crying. But in spite of being angry, I knew that the story would be wonderful. I love the juxtaposition of how Mr. Frederson with Russell, how one is missing Ellie and the other one has no father figure, and how through the crazy adventure through the falls, they find each other as well as what they need. Who doesn't love Doug? Seriously, our family dog, Tyke, looks exactly like Doug, so I'm a bit biased. But, ugh, so, so great. So happy. Leanne." Thanks, Leanne.
Yeah, Doug is one animal sidekick in a Pixar, Disney, you know, that kind of film that doesn't annoy the heck out of you. Like, he's totally lovable. I don't know anyone who doesn't like Doug in Up.
He was voted our top loved character, wasn't he?
Yeah, we had a poll on the sidebar of the website, and he definitely swept the ballot. People love Doug. Okay, now our final email is from Jacob.
Can I do this one because he's from Texas?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right, this one I want to read myself. This one is from Jacob. He says, "Dear Rotoscopers, my name is Jacob Heron, and I'm from a small town in the great state of Texas. Hello. Awesome. I've been listening to your amazing podcast since January 2014, and you kept me entertained, informed, and laughing all while I'm traveling and or drawing. When I heard you were doing animated movies over Man and Woman's Best Friend, I was ecstatic. I noticed that you didn't mention one of Disney's beloved puppy overloaded classics, 101 Dalmatians. Who doesn't love a puppy, right? Anyway, I also hope you include Disney's Bolt in your review selection. I love this movie to death, and what's not to love about a dog who thinks and believes he is a real superdog, and his journey to find his beloved owner and discover who he really is. I would have loved to see this movie adapted into an actual TV series. Thank you for reading my email. Keep up great podcasting, and God bless. Thanks again, Jacob H." First of all, thank you for being Texan. You're awesome. And second of all, I will admit that in our I don't know how long this dogs series is gonna go on, but like, we have missed like 101 Dalmatians and like Lady and the Tramp. Like, those are like really dog movies. But I'm glad we did Up because people were clamoring about that one too.
Yes.
Like, fans really wanted to hear that one.
Hey, Rotoscopers, this is Dan Siciliano, and I am very, 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 very excited about your next podcast episode centered around Don Bluth's All Dogs Go to Heaven. This film is one of my top three favorite animated movies, along with The Secret of Nim and Fantasia. I don't care if anybody is slamming the picture. I just love this film because it has a lot of colorful moments, especially the opening of the film with about, like, 5 to 7 minutes long, like the opening dog pound escape sequence with Charlie and Itchy, the rat race sequence. It's such a colorful and funny sequence, and the You Can't Keep a Good Dog Down musical number. I just love this film. I extra love it with the original version, the original home video version back in 1990, where you have the original MGM home video logo, the Dom DeLuise intro and outro, the sneak preview to Rockadoodle, and the commercial from Downey. I just love this film no matter what. So I just hope you guys are doing well, and I wonder how your opinion of the film is, and I'm not going to bite about it if you give a bad remark on the film.
Hello, Rotoscopers. It's Maddie Allen here from Plymouth, England. I hold a Bachelor of Arts degree in Animation Arts. And here is the good and the bad from All Dogs Go to Heaven. So firstly, the good. The characters. The characters in this film are great. Mason talks about his animation principles, and you can see that all those principles have gone into bringing these characters to life. I mean, they move brilliantly. I love all the characters in this film. A bad point is that you can actually see in this film where budget cuts have taken place. I mean, there's a couple points where you can see some of the shadowing from the cell layers. Also, some of the backgrounds in some areas are not as good as the rest of the film. And even some of the supporting characters, like the female dogs, the puppies, the horses, or any of the other animals, are badly caricatured compared to that of the dogs. I mean, the dogs are caricatured really well in this film. I mean, even the rats are. I mean, that is my quick review in a nutshell. Thanks for the podcast. I really enjoy them. And I'll catch you on the flip side.
All right, guys, thanks for another fabulous episode with the classic All Dogs Go to Heaven. It was a fun episode to talk about. And I like this one because we didn't really go scene by scene by scene, which we've kind of fallen in the habit of doing in recent episodes. We just sort of talked about whatever we wanted to talk about, and that was fun. If you want to prove to the world that you got to the end of this episode, use the hashtag PinkWhippet. And, of course, anytime you're referring to the podcast, use the hashtag AnimAddicts. You can find the show notes at rotoscopers.com/67 on our website, rotoscopers.com. That's where you can find all of the latest news and reviews of the animation world, including our YouTube channel, which has been featuring more and more of Mason, which is really exciting to have his videos on there and his reviews. Very, very fun stuff. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a review if you've been listening for a while. You know, those people who write in saying, I've been listening since day one. You guys, that's who we want reviews from. Just saying. And, of course, you can listen to us on Stitcher Radio and anywhere great podcasts are found. If you want to send us an email, email us at contact@therotoscopers.com. And voicemails, we love voicemails because we get to hear your voice. Rotoscopers.com/voicemail, or you can call in on your phone at 406-646-6575. Also, don't forget to use our amazing affiliate links. So if you're ever shopping on Amazon, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com/Amazon. We get a little kickback for everything you purchase. Thank you, person who bought a TV in the past few months. That was great.
Awesome.
That was fantastic.
Keep buying TVs, America. Come on.
And if you're interested in audiobooks, go to rotoscopers.com/audible. We love audiobooks. We love podcasts. But sometimes, you know, you got to get your literary whatever. But sometimes you got to get your reading in. So Audible is a great way to do that. You can do it at the gym, in the car. It's great. So, yes, I'm Morgan Stradling. You find me at Twitter, @MorganStradling.
I'm Chelsea Robson. You can find me @ChelseaRobson on Twitter, as well as on my Facebook, which is ChelseaRobson.com. You can get there.
And as always, I'm Mason Smith. You can find me at Twitter at Mason, SMTX. And that's, yeah, that's the best way to reach me on social media right now.
Yes. Ever since Mason has joined Twitter, Twitter has been a better place.
Aww.
I remember the days when Mason wasn't on Twitter, and it was sad.
It was a sad place.
Because it was like, we're all here except for him. He's like this cool celebrity who's too cool to interact with fans and people, but now he is.
Oh, shucks.
He's joined the community, and, you know,
it made a bigger splash than when Iron Man got a Twitter.
Well, speaking of being too cool to hang out with fans, by the time this podcast is released, I'm still going to be in the Houston area. So if you're a fan and you want to like hang out or meet me, you know, if you think that'd be cool, then send me a shout out because I'll be in the Houston area being bored. Like, seriously, all I've been doing is, you know, going out, you know, never mind.
So Rotoscopers meetup in Houston. If you're interested, tweet Mason Smith, Mason SMTX. For real, that is happening. If you're interested in doing a meetup in the Arizona, Phoenix area, tweet me, Morgan Stradling. And if you're interested in the Nashville area, tweet Chelsea at Chelsea Robson. Because for real, we've done one, we've done a meetup in Arizona, and no one came. No one came. It was
okay. That was also like 2 years ago.
It was our friends from Animation Fascination came, and then our real life friends who listened to the podcast came. So it was really fun. It was a blast. We watched, we projected How to Train Your Dragon on a big screen outside and had a bonfire. It was super cool. So yeah, if you want these to happen, like tweet us or tweet at the Rotoscopers and we'll make this happen.
We like having friends.
We do.
Friend.
All right, guys, until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
And that's spelled WHIPPET. Right?
You said PP. We're like Voltron. We like turn into this giant robot. Oh, great. It's all on me again. Apparently, freaking train. How many trains are they going to put come through this town?
This alligator also reminded me of Speed from the Swamp Princess. Like, there's always this character that's really fast at swimming in the water, and okay, never mind. Just cut that all out. The juxtaposition between his diabolicalness. Thank you. Let me just say that. I think the juxtaposition. I can't talk. Let me try this one more time, guys. I love the juxtaposition between.
By the way, getting to the point where you could say juxtaposition. Dang, I can't even say it. That's gonna be a good part of the.
the
blooper reel. Yeah, wow, I can't even say it. Juxtaposition. There we go.
Juxtaposition.
Oh well. Way to go on your first try. Shut up, Chelsea.
I want you all to know that I'm better than you.
Well, you're great. You're pretty great.
Gonna
speak so
up against.
There you go.
Revenge. Anyway,
I remember watching it the first time and feeling so mad at how, yet again, the married life scene started the movie off with me crying. But in spite of being angry, I knew that the story would be wonderful. I love the juxtaposition. See how I got that on the first try? Of Mr. Fredrickson with Russell.
How... Okay.
Quiet, Chelsea.
I love the juxtaposition, twice in a row, of how Mr. Fredrickson with Russell...
Basically, the last 5 minutes, just cut. Just cut after I said there's a poll
just
on the website.
Throw it all away. Just...
Okay, cool. Well, I made that way more complicated. Chelsea made that way more complicated.
Sorry.
Stupid person who can... pronounce juxtaposition. Dang it!